Good afternoon. Welcome, Brian Noonan in for Bill and Wendy, the final show of 2016. Can you believe it, Kevin? A year of shows in the books.
I can't. It goes by so fast.
It does go by fast. And as you get older, it seems to go by faster and faster. And hopefully this 2 hours flies by. If not, I'm just going to hang around and sit in with Elton Jim for about 4 hours. But very exciting show planned, as always. More fun when you're involved. 312-981-7200. When you call in, you'll be talking to the very talented Kevin Richter. He is the executive producer of the Bill and Wendy program. Be nice to him, you get to me. That's how it works. And if you're on social media, it's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter, so we monitor those as well. We're going to do some fun things today. We're going to talk to David Blaustein from ABC News about the top movies of 2016. Bobcat Goldthwait. Now, we have to check. Is he still going by Bobcat or Bob now that he's a grown-up film director?
He was pitched to me as Bobcat, so I think
Maybe he's gone back. And we'll have to mention to Bobcat, maybe you can do this, Kevin, because I don't want to seem like I'm name-dropping. Bobcat and I worked together in Omaha, and I drove him over to the Riverboat Casino because he had to see some Elvis impersonators. So this was my run-in with Bobcat.
He had to see some Elvis
person? I forget why, but yes, there was a reason that he felt there was an Elvis convention at the casino in Omaha at this point, and he wanted to go, and he asked me to go with, so I drove him over. We went to the casino, saw some Elvis impersonators. It was quite an evening, and then and then we came back. It was that was it.
That's a bizarre story.
Most of my stories tend toward the bizarre, because if I had just a regular life, you know, then I'd be an accountant somewhere, which is fine. That would have been great. But no, I've got these weird stories because of the life path I've chosen. And then I'm, you know, hanging out in a casino in Omaha with Bobcat Goldthwait watching Elvis impersonators.
I mean, worse things could happen, I guess.
Worse things could happen. Maybe you didn't hear the other night when the cremation ashes went all over me. That was another. That one's going into the broadcast museum. That was a fascinating story. So a lot to get to. We'll talk to Bobcat. Also, everybody is clamoring for Hamilton tickets. Oh, we all got to go see Hamilton. I'm going to see Hamilton on Tuesday. I cannot wait, but let's make fun of Hamilton. A little Spamilton is coming to town. We will talk to one of the producers of that fine show, or the writer, actually the man who wrote Spamilton. He's also written Forbidden Broadway. He's written all sorts of wonderful shows. We'll talk about that upcoming performance too, so a lot to get to. All right, we started to mention this yesterday, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because, everybody talks about resolutions. Oh, and Kevin's learning to sew, which was very exciting. Yesterday, we learned all about that. Matt Bubala said he wanted to learn to cross stitch. So there's a lot of things going on. A lot of men doing needlework in 2017, which is nice. And I don't mean heroin or tattoo. I mean some sort of mending. So that's always good. But there are some resolutions, according to experts, that you should not make. So we'll blow through a couple of these if you're making your list. I have not made a New Year's resolution for 2017. One, because let's be honest, my 2016 was phenomenal, so why change anything? That is completely false. But there's also a time I look at these, at the resolutions, and I think back to ones I've tried in the past, and I know I should write things down because that makes it more concrete. I should say it in public so that people can hold me to it. But then I'm like, like when I finally decided to lose all my weight, it wasn't because of a New Year's resolution. It was because I saw myself in a picture and went, oh my God, I've blocked out the sun. So that was kind of it. But as I was thinking more about it, I thought, okay, what could I do better in 2017? And that didn't take long to come up with a pretty long list, but here are my two things. One, I'm going to try to be more patient with my wife and daughter, which will stem to being more patient with the universe, because I am very impatient. I don't suffer fools well, and I tend to overreact. And then in tandem with that, being more patient, I will also endeavor to let things go, because I am Irish and probably mentally unstable, and I hold a grudge for a long time, and things eat at me and fester. And so those are my two. I'm going to be more patient, and I'm going to let things go. Just like in Frozen. I'm going to let it go,
Admirable. Good call.
Thank you. I don't know how well I'll succeed, but I'm going to try. And I'll talk to you next week, let you know how that worked out. As I'm going, I can't believe this guy. I want to kill this guy. And then I'm snapping at everybody. And the patience will, this is where it's going to be really tough. The patience is going to hopefully spread into when I close the door of my car, because I am the most impatient driver probably on the planet. I would put myself up against anybody for my impatience. And to the point where lately I've been in situations where I, for a moment, wished I had a bat in the car. And then I thought to myself, well, that's not going to serve anybody's purpose. If you get out of the car and start swatting cars or people with a bat, that's probably bad.
Yeah, that's one of those thoughts where you're like, oh, my God, what am I thinking right
yes.
now?
Yes. Oh, I know. Trust me. I have those all the time, Kevin. Those thoughts are constantly coming at me.
Yeah.
So I have to do my best to rein them in. So 2016 is the year I rein it in. 2017 is the year I rein it in. So we'll see how that works. But here, just a couple that maybe you shouldn't be making, because it all comes down to, and I think you'll see this, that these are just too vague. Be more positive. Well, okay, but that again, very vague. Instead of saying, I'm just going to choose to be more positive, these experts say, choose gratitude or happiness, that you're going to be happy and grateful every day.
That's
okay.
Good.
It is nice.
That doesn't seem like quantifiable, though. You know what I mean? Like,
Yes. See, that's just it. A lot of these are one of those where it's like, it's everybody. I'm going to spend more time with my family. I'm going to improve my relationships. I'm going to fall in love, which is never. This is a year I fall in love. Really? That's unless you're ordering your love out of a catalog. That doesn't really happen, right? You don't plan to fall in love. It just you're walking down the street and bam, there it is. You know, you never know. When you met your wife, were you out that night? I'm going to fall in love and meet a woman.
Nope, not at all.
Me either. I was out having a couple beers at a country bar, and I met this woman, and then now 25 years later, we're still together. So, yeah, you never know. I was not out, looking for love in all the wrong places, as Mickey Gilley once said. Another thing you should not resolve to do is have a child, because that leads to nothing but disappointment, according to these experts. You can begin trying. That's always good. I resolve every year to try, you can make plans, but you have to make sure you're not putting all your eggs in that basket, because that could lead to disappointment, because you just never know. And the biggest one, I heard Frank talking about smoking. They say you shouldn't try to do that. Instead of a resolution to quit smoking, resolve to find a support group that will help you get the ball rolling to make the decision and make your transition a little easier. And that's the same with losing weight. You can't just say, I'm going to lose weight. You have to, and Kevin mentioned this before, you have to quantify things. So if you say, all right, 2017 is the year I'm going to lose weight, and you think to yourself, man, I got a ton of weight to lose. Well, if you look at it in that big a picture, you're bound to become disappointed. So if you know you have, I don't know, let's say, for example, you have 50 pounds you want to lose. All right, don't look at the 50 pounds, because 50 pounds is an enormous amount of weight. Go, all right, I'm going to start slow, and I'm going to set smaller goals. I'm going to try for 10 pounds. But the way I'm going to do it is I'm going to change other parts of my life, because you don't want to look at it like you're dieting. You want to look at it like you've changed your life. So I'm going to start maybe taking a short walk every day, or I'm going to give up my Frappuccino and just have a regular cup of coffee. Little steps, baby steps, and suddenly you're getting a little closer to the ultimate goal. You have your ultimate goal, but you break it down into little steps, and things get easier and easier. Oh, Johnny Lee said, looking for love in all the wrong places. How do I mess up Johnny Lee and Mickey Gilley? Because I was I mixed up my country music. I apologize. How to be more optimistic from the 312, knowing the only person you control is you. That is absolutely right. And that's the thing. It goes to the Serenity Prayer, if you want to get all mythological on it. And that's the prayer used in Alcoholics Anonymous and some other support groups, where you're asking for the serenity to accept the things you cannot change, the courage to change the things you can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So if that's my problem. I think I should be able to control everyone, because everyone should really. I have a lot of good ideas. People should be paying more attention to me and listening, just like I'm listening to you, Kevin, when you're telling me we have to take a break.
That's right.
So we'll do that, and then we'll come back. 312-981-7200. There's some new driving laws going into effect in 2017, but if you want to weigh in on these on the resolution talk, you're welcome to do that, too. We got a lot to cover and a short time to do it, so we'll get to it now on WGN. It's Brian Noonan in for Bill and Wendy. The end of 2016. We look forward to 2017 for so many reasons. Should be nice. Everybody is milling about outside the Allstate Showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue. The barricades are up for Chi-Town Rising. The Star now has some color on it. Oh, I can't wait. Supposedly, we're going to have more local hosts this year. It should be a more localized thing. I will be working, but then I will try to catch a little of it. Hopefully to see the Star rise, because we have a big Tony and Tina performance. Speaking of that, after 2 o'clock, in the 2 o'clock hour, I'm going to give you a chance to go see Tony and Tina's. I have a pair of tickets to give away, the final one of the week. So this is very, very exciting. I mentioned that there's some new Illinois driving laws going into effect. If you're like me, you always have to stay abreast of the driving laws because there's a good chance you will be breaking them at any given moment. A couple of them make sense to me this year. Usually I look at them and I say, boy, these are just kind of put in for a revenue grab. Yes, I'm looking at you, City of Chicago, with your red light cameras and your imaginary school zones. And hey, a park safety zone. Really? At 11:30 on a Sunday night when there hasn't been a person in that park since 1972? Sure, that makes sense. I'll take the $100 ticket. If it helps the city, then everybody's happy. Those are the words. And I love, listen, it's all about the safety of the children. Really? I've gotten some of these tickets. There are no children within a mile of these safe zones. It's not about safe. Just come out and say it. Listen, we are really short of cash. We're jacking up taxes next year. You're going to be paying new water taxes, new garbage taxes. You're going to be paying 7 cents for a bag if you go to the grocery store because our ban on the one-use bags didn't work. So now we're going to tax you into compliance. So just be forthright and say, we need all the money we can get. So anywhere we can put up a camera to catch you doing anything speed-wise, we're going to do it. You're going to pay $100, and that's how it's going to go. And yet, the one law that is written that we should all be obeying, the no using a cell phone with your while you're driving, no texting while driving, oh, we can't enforce that. But if I go 37 at a 35 through some random area, might as well get Nuna for 100. You know, that'll be fine. When we first moved in closer to the city, I was working in Lincoln Park, and I was driving up Ogden all the time to get to work. I didn't realize these park zones were in effect. $900 the city got me for.
Whoa.
$900. Because they get you if you go 1 mile over, these cameras. And I guess it was a 25, and I was never going. It wasn't like you looked at the ticket and went, oh, my God, you should never be going 115 on a surface street.
Right.
It was like, oh, 27, that seems reasonable. No, not here. We got you.
Isn't that within the realm of, like, error of a speedometer?
Not with a camera. Okay. With a human police officer, it is.
Okay.
But with a with a camera, and then my wife would go, did you do this? And I'm like, and it's hard to deny it when, you know, there's the license. There's my big mug in the other picture. It's like, no, I don't think that was me. That looks like somebody else. I have no idea. All right, so here's some of the new driving laws. Scott's Law. This makes sense. Referred to as the move-over law, it requires drivers to slow down or change lanes when driving by a stopped emergency vehicle, which should be common sense. If you see an ambulance or a Minuteman truck or a police officer or something on the side of the road, give them a wide berth because you don't know who's working there, but we need a law because people are basically dumb. So beginning in 2017, the law will also include any vehicle on the side of the road with hazard lights flashing, which is another smart, common sense thing that we should have all been doing. If you see somebody broken down on the side of the road trying to change a flat, have you ever had to change a flat on the side of the expressway?
Yeah, it's awful.
Yes, because no one will give you that space.
Right, right.
They're staying right on the white line, right, hey, this is my lane. Yeah, but you're going to hit me. So good, Scott's Law goes into effect. Pay attention, give people some room. Here we go. Speeding through a worker school zone could warrant jail time. I'm going to need a convicts unit if I'm going to be doing our comrex to be doing my show from the joint because there's no chance. Speeding between 26 and 35 miles per hour over. I never do that. Speeding between 26 and 35 miles over the posted limit is a Class B misdemeanor, and driving more than 35 miles per hour is now considered a Class A misdemeanor. That's for the road racers. I'm good with that. But that should be everywhere, not just a worker school zone. This is good, too. Those who have been convicted of driving without insurance could have their vehicles impounded if they are stopped by police within 12 months of the first citation. Good. Take it. Because if you hit somebody and you're uninsured, then you're really piling on the person that you've hit. You know, it's an inconvenience anyway, but if your insurance company is going to pay for it, We'll get that. So according to the Illinois State Police, the new year usually brings new resolutions and goals. In 2017, the Illinois State Police resolves to continue to work towards strengthening safe driving habits for motorists on Illinois roadways. Unfortunately, I think to do that, you would have to cull the masses and take about, I'm going to go with a careful estimate, we got to get rid of about 75% of drivers. That's it. Careful estimate. I may be a little bit low, but I'm giving people the, I think 25% of people driving probably pay attention. Others do not.
That's so scary, too, when you think about
it.
It's like,
horrible.
Humans aren't supposed to go 65 miles an hour.
No.
You know what I mean?
They're not meant to go 65 miles per hour, wrapped in 3,000 pounds of steel, while they're looking down at a phone, going,
right.
Hey, should I pick up a burger? Blam. It's horrifying. And we joke about it, and we talk about it till we're blue in the face, but it never, ever goes away. All right, on the other side of the news, we are going to talk to David Blaustein from ABC News. He's an entertainment correspondent. We'll recap some of the best movies of 2016 as we wrap up the year here on WGN. It's Brian Noonan in for Bill and Wendy here until 3, and then Elton Jim is sitting in for Ro Khan today. It wouldn't be the end of the year if we didn't do some best of lists. I think contractually we are obligated to do at least one best of list before the year ends. And when it comes to entertainment, I love going to the movies. This year I have been woefully behind. So I know when I talk to David Blaustein from ABC News that I will probably not know, unfortunately, any of the movies he recommends. Hi, David. Thanks for taking some time this afternoon.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me. Don't worry. I'm here for you.
Good. Normally I try to get to the movies. Unfortunately, this year it was, Captain America Civil War and a couple others here and there. But I look at some of the lists and I'm just like, oh, these sound wonderful. No wonder they're on lists. I have to see them.
Yeah, there were a lot of good movies out this year. And you should definitely, if you have an opportunity and the time, you should try to see all of them, I think. You know, this is always a hard list to make, especially in a year where there are good movies and there are so many good movies. There usually are a number of good movies. You could usually find at least 20 quality movies. This year, I tried to make a top 10, couldn't really fit it. I really have more like 12 or 13, and I even left some off the list that definitely deserve to be on it. I'll start you off with Martin Scorsese's Silence, and that's a movie. If you love Scorsese, you should see it. If you love film, you should see it. I think it's one of his best. It's a long movie, but it tells a story that a lot of people probably aren't familiar with, and that's in 17th century Japan. If you were a Christian or a Christian missionary, you were either tortured or killed if you didn't renounce Jesus. And, that story in the hands of Martin Scorsese is special because he's really kind of I don't know if obsessed is the right word, but very passionate about religion. He almost became a priest, so there's that.
Well, I read about that. That one's been, he's been wanting to make that film for a long time, right?
His entire life, pretty much. I think since he became a filmmaker, it's a story that he wanted to tell. And, he's so good at, pays attention to detail and really good at symbolism and, great directing actors. And, he's got some good tools to play with here with Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver. And they're just terrific. A number of really great Asian actors, too, some who most people wouldn't even be familiar with probably, but will want to be familiar with after they see it. Sully, I thought, was a really terrific movie. And if anything, for the five-minute sequence where they recreate Flight 1589, the U.S. Airways flight that ditched in the Hudson, Tom Hanks is great. I'll cover some Disney movies, even though now I have to say that Disney's the parent company of ABC.
Of course.
I am an ABC employee, but I've trashed many Disney movies. But, let's give Disney their due. Moana, terrific movie. If you have little kids, you're probably aware of that by now. So is Peach Dragon, two of those tearjerkers of the highest order. I mean, you'll just float out of the theater in a river of tears because people around you are crying.
Disney has always done that. Disney knows how to just get in and find your heartstrings and then completely tear them out.
Brian, they manipulate my feelings.
I know, and it's not fair, David.
They know how to do it. It's because they're great storytellers. I mean, they really pride themselves. You know, the Pixar, Disney Animation, all of them, I mean, generally, if it's a major motion picture, they're very, very, very focused on story. And I believe me, I could devote an hour on good storytelling when it comes to screenwriting and cinema. But also the other Disney film would be Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
Well, yeah.
Which for me is maybe one of the, maybe the best Star Wars movie ever made. I mean,
wow.
Look, you have to say the original Star Wars is the best one because it started it all.
Sure.
By the time I was 21, I'd seen it over 100 times. I'm not really embarrassed to say that, but it's true. But still, I mean, as far as storytelling and as far as being thrilling is concerned, the way the drama unfolds, it's unmatched by any other Star Wars movie. And then, you know, you get into a movie called Nocturnal Animals by Tom Ford, who's a fashion designer,
yes,
but a very good director.
Somebody else was telling me about that movie. They said it was that was another one where they came out emotionally exhausted at the end of it.
Yeah, it's a very interesting and creative narrative. It's sort of a story within a story, and you have Jake Gyllenhaal and Amy Adams, and anytime you put those two together in a movie, probably going to wind up being one of the best movies of the year. It helps that Tom Ford really is stylistically a stunning storyteller, really good. 10 Cloverfield Lane is a movie that came out in March, which I think doesn't get talked about enough. One of the best thrillers of the year, John Goodman, one of the best performances of the year. There's no real campaign to get him nominated for an award, but I'd like to start one. I know that there was some film critics group, I think maybe in Florida somewhere, that actually recognized that performance, and I'm hoping on the morning of the Oscar nominations, they recognize his performance. Then we get into, I guess, what I consider the five best movies of the year, which is a film called Loving, which is based on the true story of Richard and Mildred Loving, and they were the couple that kind of took down segregation in Virginia, an interracial couple that saw their case go to the Supreme Court. Then another movie called Lion, which is also based on a true story, a young Indian man who separated from his brother when he's five and then separated from his entire family, winds up in Calcutta all by himself because he fell asleep on a train he shouldn't have been on, and then spends his adult life trying to find his biological family and trying to find the town where he was from because he was only 5 years old and he remembered the name of the town incorrectly. So that's a great movie.
And that's Nicole Kidman, right?
Nicole Kidman's in that too. You know, her part's not nearly as important as Dev Patel from Slumdog Millionaire. And then we have the three best movies of the year.
Right.
And I'll start out with Moonlight, which is a film that's going to win Oscars. I don't think it's going to win Best Picture. It could. It probably won't. But this is a coming-of-age story of a young gay black man in southern Florida who has to reconcile his sexuality and who he is and his place in this world. It's told in three different stages, when he's a child, when he's a teenager, and then when he's an adult. And it's one of the more surprising movies of the year, the way it unfolds and the way it was shot. I expect it to win Best Director. I expect it to win Best Cinematography, and I expect it to win Best Score. It really stunning movie. The movie that I think will win Best Picture is not my number one movie of the year, but it's close, and that's La La Land. And you've probably
I've been hearing a lot about that one.
Yeah, and you know the timing is interesting because we just lost Debbie Reynolds, and Debbie Reynolds was, our last great star from that era of those dance musicals, you know, Singing in the Rain and anything that Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire was in, and that's what this is. But it's with Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, and it's also a pretty subversive love story, which I think a lot of people don't recognize when they walk out of the movie or when they're seeing it, but I love it. And my favorite movie of the year is Arrival, and this is the movie with Amy Adams.
Yes.
Amy Adams again, and it's also a film that I think confuses some people. The ending's a little controversial. People either seem to love it or they're not sure what to make of it. I absolutely love it. I think, you know, it's a twist on the old alien invasion movie, and it has a surprise in it that it is just maybe matched by The Sixth Sense. You know,
to me,
The Sixth Sense had one of the greatest endings in any movie, and I think that this movie is kind of similar in that respect. I really think it's one of the best science fiction movies ever made. There's something incredibly original about it and just stunning to watch. So those would be my best movies of the year. There are other movies I didn't mention that I think probably could go on that list.
Well, you don't have any superhero movies on this list, David.
No, I don't. You know what? I what
disappointing.
I would the two movies that I would put on this list, I'd put Civil War on this list, and I'd put Deadpool on this list, too.
Yes, I would agree with both of those.
Yeah.
They were fantastic.
Those are very terrific, very entertaining, smart in many ways, and I think checks off all the boxes for people who love that genre. Deadpool was very surprising. You know, it could have been a massive failure, but it turned out to be just as good, I think, as everybody was expecting it to be based on that first trailer that they put out at Comic-Con a couple of years ago.
Now, as you look back over the past year, and you deal with movies all the time, was there one movie that from the advanced hype and the trailer and everything else, you thought, man, this movie is going to be phenomenal? And then you saw it and went, wow, that was awful.
You know, it's a tough question to ask me because I don't buy into trailers. You know, I'll get lost in a trailer, and I respect if a trailer is great. But I know a thing or two about making trailers, especially trailers that come from big budgets. And this is going to sound funny, but it's true. A lot of trailers are actually created in labs. I'm not kidding.
Is that right?
They actually take people, put them in an MRI machine, and they scan their brain. They show them clips, and they'll take a number of people, and a lot of times they will create trailers that way.
Oh, my God.
You are being manipulated. Not every single trailer is like that, but there are quite a few. But a lot of times you are being manipulated. You watch a trailer, and you can't help but feel something, you know? And that is by design. You know, they're designed to give you, to elicit and evoke an emotional reaction. That
you are blowing
you really
my mind. This is not how I want to go into the new year, knowing that the man is manipulating me.
Because you're always being manipulated.
Unbelievable. So yep. I didn't know about that with the lab thing. I know they're, you know, I know about focus groups and all that, and people try to get the most bang for their buck. But going into an MRI machine so you can see what cut to put in the trailer, that's horrifying.
Yeah, it's some sort of machine that can scan your brain and they monitor it. They will show a person clips, and they can see what part of the brain it's stimulating, like what kind of reaction the person is having to it. And it's remarkable. I mean, it was jaw-dropping when I found that out. It sounds like some crazy conspiracy. Yeah. But it's 100% accurate. And, yeah, it's definitely kind of a crazy thing.
Very Orwellian. All right, well, then let me ask you this question. This is probably a little, hopefully, not as scary as the last answer. What was the biggest surprise then for you this year in the theaters?
The biggest surprise. 10 Cloverfield Lane was one of them. You know, it's a movie I mentioned. I put it in one of my top movies of the year. It's a movie that came out in March. Not a lot of people are talking about it right now, but if you go back and you look at the reviews in March, they were really stellar.
Okay.
You know, really stellar. I think Rogue One, believe it or not, was a huge surprise for me. It was a movie I had absolutely no desire to see. And again, we mentioned
I was going to say, even with how much you love the originals, you didn't have
even
a desire to see this?
I love the originals, and I'm being as honest as I could possibly be. When Disney announced my own company, now, don't get me wrong, because I knew this was going to be great for my 401k. But when Disney announced the acquisition of Lucasfilms, I wasn't necessarily happy about that, you know, and they announced their plans, and I thought, I don't know if I need to see any more Star Wars movies. I'm not into any of the cartoons, and a lot of my friends are. A lot of guys I grew up with who we love Star Wars together. They're very passionate about the cartoons. They watch it with their kids. And I've never really been that way. I wasn't that enthusiastic about The Force Awakens, but, you know, I did kind of get excited, and I did love the movie. But I had no great love or passion for a spinoff movie. I didn't really need to see how the Rebels got the plans.
Okay.
It really, you know, it just, it seemed, I don't want to say it was desperate, but it seemed like a cash grab to me. But of course, this is a business. That's the way it goes.
Right.
And, you know, I hope for the best, but even walking to the movie theater with one of my best friends, my buddy who I used to constantly quote lines from Star Wars with as a teenager, he was excited and I was not. And for me, the quality of that movie and what it turned out to be was extremely surprising to me.
Now, if I want to go see Rogue One, do I need to see the previous one? Do I need to see that one before I see Rogue One?
Well, you know, it takes place between episodes 3 and 4.
Okay.
So, you know, it doesn't hurt if you see episode three. It helps if you're familiar. It even helps if you've seen episode four, which was the very first Star Wars movie.
Yes.
But it changes some things about episode four as well. Oh. But I think, you know, there was just sheer delight on my part when some of the things that unfolded during that movie started happening. And the way it finished, I thought, was pretty thrilling. And actually more poignant because of in light of the events of the past week.
Definitely.
Yep.
Well, David, I appreciate all the information. Have a very happy New Year. I look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Thanks, Brian. Take care.
Take care. That's David Blaustein. He is the ABC News entertainment correspondent talking about movies. If you want to jump in on the other side with your favorite movie of the year, that's fine, too. If not, I'm going to have another reason why I just don't trust cats. That's right. There's a lot going on here because it's the last day of the year for me on WGN. After the 2 o'clock news, Bobcat Goldthwait will join us. He's got a big show in Aurora for New Year's Eve if you're looking for something to do. He's actually got two shows that night. We'll talk to him about those and what he's been up to. His career as a director, a lot to get to with Bobcat. A couple of texts on the movies. Some people saying the last thing I want from somebody from 312, last thing I want when I go to the movies is reality. I want superheroes any day of the week. I always see, I'm the same way. And that's the thing, when you read over these critics lists for the end of the year, whether it's TV, movies, music, whatever it is, and you're a big music guy, Kevin, so I know you're reading over some of these like best albums of the year, and every music critic will have a different list, and every movie critic, and a lot of times I look at these movie and TV lists, and I don't see a ton of movies anymore, but I do watch TV, and I'll look and I'll go, these are shows that are not, or movies that are not really popular, and yet they're lauded as these wonderful masterpieces. And then I think, well, that's the studio's fault for not putting any marketing money behind these. If these movies are so wonderful, then they should be pushing them harder. Or are they just critics going, look how erudite I am, and I will tell you about a movie you've never seen and never have any chance of seeing, and yet it's wonderful, and you should feel like an idiot because you did not see it. And then we all go, man, I'm pretty dumb. I better go out and try to find this.
Same thing with music, too. It's every list is... Well, actually, a lot of times I find like a lot of the lists are beating the same things down your throat, and
okay.
Like, I don't always agree with that.
And is it because that seems like the hip or it band or it album? Or...
I think that has a lot to do with it.
So what is everybody saying is 2016's top couple albums?
I'm hearing a lot about Frank Ocean, which I could not disagree with more. I was
so
disappointed. There was all this hype building up the album, and it just bores me to death.
Okay.
What else was there? I'm actually just shocked that I haven't seen from My Morning Jacket.
Okay.
His name is Jim James, and he put out a solo album, and it is so good.
Really?
So good.
That's talking about that?
Nobody's talking about it.
Now, you and Michael Heideman, of course, have Sound Opinions on...
Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions. Oh, yeah, Sound Opinions is that other one. That's... We don't... No, Sound Sessions, which is a better name. I like alliteration better.
Thank you.
Sound Sessions, that's on WGN Plus. You go there and listen to all about music.
Yeah, that's right.
And you guys interview all sorts of interesting
interesting
characters, musicians and things. So what was your biggest disappointment then? Frank Ocean, would that be your biggest disappointment of the year?
Like I said, there was all this hype building it up, and Kanye West is behind him and shouting his name from the mountaintops.
Well, that immediately puts a red flag up for me.
Well, and his last album, I loved. I thought it was brilliant. Yeah. But this one, it's an R&B solo album, and there's like drums on maybe two tracks. And how do you have an R&B solo album without drums?
I don't profess to have any great musical knowledge, but I know enough to say you can't. You cannot. You need drums on an R&B album.
Yeah.
You need some, I don't know, rhythm.
Yes.
See, that's where the R comes.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Exactly.
Again, who knows? Who knows? I'm going to infuriate cat people, but if you are a cat person, well, you know why I'm saying this. Another reason I do not trust cats, I always trust dogs. Andrew Woodward of Georgia. He had a video go viral after his cat was filmed attacking him as he opened his Christmas presents. See, that's why. Cats, you cannot trust them. He's all excited. He yells, I got a PlayStation. I got a PlayStation for Christmas. And he's having a great time. And then, bang, his cat lunges straight to his face, striking his neck. Turned horrible. He falls backwards onto the carpet. And the attack resulted in a trip to the doctor. He had to get stitches. Now, there's no history of abuse, according to everybody, witnesses and everyone else. This cat is well taken care of, but the cat just decided to snap. And this cat has attacked other people in the past. Now, pet experts, of course, jumped to his defense. A grown-up was clearly overexcited, and as a joke, and the cat walked across the room and then dove right at him. So there you go. Now people are going to say, well, dogs attack all the time. Listen, I opened a ton of presents. I watched people open presents in my house. My dog didn't attack anybody. My dog went away, minded her own business, then came back to see if Santa had left her anything, which of course he had, because we're those people who fill a stocking for their dog. And then my wife will say, oh, to the dog, oh, did you see what Santa left you? And I'm like, the dog doesn't care. The dog thinks there's treats in there, which there are, so just pour the treats out. Enough of the yapping, and give the dog the rawhide.
We got scalded because we don't give our cat. Well, typically we don't give our cat.
You don't
see that? That's exactly what happens. We give him wrapping paper that gets torn off the gift.
Oh, see, now that sounds like
he
fun
loves
for
it.
A cat. Sure,
he loves it.
Then that is a gift. That is your gift. You don't have to go to one of the big pet chains or a small pet store and buy stuff. I was very happy this year. Santa got all the dog's gifts at deep discounts. So. And the dog doesn't care that they were on sale. The dog's like, oh, one of these rawhides that look like a candy cane? Killer. All right, let's do this, then it's news time, WGN. Brian Noonan in for Bill and Wendy. They will be back with you on Tuesday. We're here until 3 o'clock having some fun on the final day of 2016. For us, anyway, we know tomorrow technically is the last day. Don't call up and complain. All right, if you're looking for something to do tomorrow night, everybody needs New Year's Eve plans, unless you're just going to sit home, which is a plan in itself. But maybe you want to head out to Aurora to the Comedy Shrine and see, I'm going to say, legendary. The man has been around forever. He's a comedian, filmmaker, and I just learned from his Twitter account, a Bigfoot enthusiast, Bobcat Goldthwait. Bobcat joining us now. Good to talk to you.
Hey, how are you?
I am dandy. So when did the Bigfoot enthusiast, when did that grab you? Because you're a man of many interests. When did Bigfoot...
When I was a little boy, I was really into the Patterson Gimlin footage of, you know, of Bigfoot walking away. And then I made a scary Bigfoot movie a few years ago called Willow Creek.
Yes, and that was a departure, because a lot of your films... They're very widespread, the subject matter, and some of them are a little more mainstream, I guess, than others. What made you decide to go kind of into the horror genre?
Well, I just, I try to, every time I make a movie, I hope I could try to do something different, and it's the challenge, you know. I was just wondering if I could make a suspenseful movie and scare people, but I do know that people, the comedies that I make, they have a reputation for being dark comedies,
yes.
And I think people were just waiting around for, you know, something weird to happen. Like, all right, now Bigfoot, you know, is there going to be Bigfoot sex in this or something? But no, it's just straight on a suspense movie. So I just try to make different kinds of movies. I know a lot of your listeners probably don't know that I make movies. I mean, most people think of me from the 80s and stuff.
And you've evolved so much from the 80s. And the other day we were watching Scrooged on Christmas Eve. So the family's watching Scrooged, and I knew we were going to be talking today. And I'm watching that Bob Goldthwait and knowing the Bobcat that you've evolved into. And do you go now by Bobcat?
I like Bobcat, but okay. When I saw Scrooge again recently, there's a scene where Bill Murray throws me around in an elevator, and then he throws me around in a hallway, and I fly in an elevator.
Yes.
And then on the take, I smack my head, and I actually knocked out.
Oh.
And I remember laying on the ground and thinking, I got to tell everyone I'm okay. You know, I got to get up, and I got to let them know I'm okay. And I wake up, and I just see everybody walking away, and, you know, Richard Donner going, that's the one, Bill. That was great.
What happened to the kid? I don't know. He's fine. Leave him over there.
He always seemed a little weird. I'm sure that it didn't hurt him. But yeah, so I'm really happy to be in Scrooge, because, you know, every year it's on it's pretty nice. And you know, Bill, I truly think is the funniest person I've ever been around, you know, so. And I ended up working with Joel, who is his brother, who's a good friend of mine. And Joel and I did a movie called God Bless America together.
Well, I want to go back, if I can, to Scrooge. And you, since you mentioned people think they know you only from the 80s and Police Academy and Scrooged and Shakes the Clown, all those movies. As you look back from that period, what was your favorite role to play?
Oh, that's a good question. I think... the most fun I had in the 80s making a movie was a thing called One Crazy Summer.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, and that's where I met Joel Murray. It was kind of funny because it wasn't called One Crazy Summer when we made it. It was called My Summer Vacation, but Warner Brothers changed it to that. And I remember the guy who made it, that Steve Holland, Savage Steve Holland, was saying, you know, if Warner Brothers released the Woody Allen movie, they call it One Neurotic Jewish Guy. I had a lot of fun making that movie. A lot of advancements in indoor model rocketry, shooting rockets off down the hallway in the hotel. It was a pretty fun set. And I ended up becoming friends with Joel and stayed friends all these years.
That's very cool. Does that happen a lot on a set where you work with somebody and you stay friends, or is it like, hey, we're cool while these months that we're working together, these weeks we're working together, and then you kind of, you're gone?
Yeah, it's like an affair, yeah. It's like a summer fling. But because I've accumulated. I mean, that's what people ask me about Police Academy. That's the thing that I do like the most out of making those movies is that I became really good friends with Tim Kazurinsky.
Oh, not a bad guy to be friends with.
Yeah, and we've stayed friends all these years, and I love him. And the first day, I think, on the set, I don't think it was in the script. I just, during the take, I grabbed him and kissed him. So I guess that was a good way to start a relationship. I think it's in the movie. I just grabbed him and kissed him.
Is there one role that you look that you can't watch now for whatever reason, whether you just go, oh, I can't believe I did that one?
Well, most of them. I always say, you know, I have the body of work that, like, I do the movies that most people do on their way out as the start of my career. So, and I also say that, you know, people would, I don't act anymore, and I retired from acting the same time they stopped hiring me, so it worked out pretty well.
That's perfect.
But I actually do, I don't pursue acting, and I know people that are fans of me, which is, you know, a small group of people, but those people are kind of disappointed when I don't, but I really take being behind the camera really serious, and even though the movies I make are very, you know, are usually, they're tonally are kind of dark, but they're kind of, you know, there's always comedy in them, you know.
What was the turning point where you said, okay, I'm gonna focus not less on stand-up and acting, but this is my true love now is directing, and that's what I'm going to pursue the most?
Yeah, it was weird. I don't know. I was directing, you know, I started directing when I did Shakes, and I did a short before that, but I guess the thing that changed things is I was directing the Jimmy Kimmel Show. I did that for 3 years, and during hiatus, I shot a movie with a crew from Craigslist for $20,000, and that movie got into Sundance, and that kind of changed everything for me, I think. And then I thought, oh, maybe I can make movies.
So yeah, I must be pretty good at this.
Or at least, yeah, I mean, I was really shocked that it got into Sundance, you know. And when I got the phone call, I was on break at Kimmel, and I was in the back smoking, and I got a call. And the call came in, and I really thought it was Jimmy's cousin Sal, who does a lot of pranks, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought, he's like, hi, this is Trevor Groff from Sundance, you know. And I go, can I call you back, Trevor? and he goes, sure, why not? And then I realized it was real, and then I felt really embarrassed, and all the blood rushed out of me.
Well, but, was that Call Me Lucky? Was that the Barry Crimmins movie?
No, that was a movie. It was called Stay when it was at Sundance, and then it got changed to Sleeping Dogs Lie. But Call Me Lucky, that was the last. Now I sound like a real blowhard, but that was the last movie I had at Sundance. And that was about my good friend Barry Crimmins, who's a political satirist. And it's a really heavy story. You know, it's his as an adult dealing with the abuse he suffered as a child. He takes AOL. Back then, you know, child pornography was being exchanged on AOL, and he takes them all the way to the Supreme Court. I'm not Supreme Court, sorry, the floor of the Senate. And I've seen the movie. I should know the story. But
Once you're done with it, you probably forget all about it, right?
No.
Move on to the next project, Bob.
No. I'm actually going to make that into a narrative movie now. Judd Apatow and I are working on a script for that, and I'll direct it. He's going to produce.
Wow.
We're going to make it a narrative movie now. So Barry's stories will continue.
Cool. Congratulations on that. It's too bad you couldn't get anybody with a well-known name to work with you, though.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
I think it's funny because poor Barry was kind of semi-retired, and then I dragged him out.
Well, listen, there's worse ways to get pulled back into the business, so that doesn't seem too bad. Now, all right, I got to ask you, because you're going to be in Aurora at the Comedy Shrine tomorrow for two shows, 8 and 10 o'clock. People can go to ComedyShrine.com. But you, just like you said, you retired from acting when they started hiring you. People were still loving you doing stand-up, and a couple times you've quote-unquote retired, and now you're back. So why the fluctuation?
It's a connection that you make with a live audience. No, it's the money. No.
Thank you. That's probably what I figured.
You can connect
with them until the check comes, and then you don't want anything to do with the regular people.
No, it took me a long time to realize that I did like doing stand-up. It was just that the persona that I've been trapped in for years, I didn't enjoy that. So once I jettisoned that and started going up and telling my own stories and being, you know, funny in my own voice, I ended up enjoying it again. So even while I'm doing all these other things, I'm still doing stand-up, you know. I just did some sets in L.A., opening for my friend Bridget Everett, and I did a show the other night with Patton Oswalt. So
nice.
I do these shows, you know, in L.A. now just to keep in touch and to warm up and stuff, so... Yeah.
Well, it gives you a way, like you said, it's a connection with the audience, but it's also the immediacy. If you're making a film, your thoughts don't get seen for however many months or year. If you have a thought for stand-up, you go out and you can comment on whatever's happening that day and, get it off your chest.
It's really crazy, those moments where you actually have a genuine idea that you never had before and you stay up there. That's a really insane buzz when that happens. But that what you were saying is really true. You know, right now I'm working on a television show of my own, which is an anthology show that I write them and direct them, and so they're kind of tonally like the movies I make, and it's for True TV. And I will say that the cool thing about doing a series is that the turnaround's a lot quicker on the episode. So it's a little. It's a little bit more like doing stand-up where I don't have to wait a year, but we'll see. We'll see what people make of the show. You know, there was over 400 scripted shows last year.
I saw that because of all the different, with all the smaller networks, all the cable networks. It was an astounding number. I couldn't believe it.
I know. It's like, how do you make a dent, you know?
Well, that's a good question. How do you rise above the fray?
I don't know. I mean, it's because, and by the way, a lot of the shows are really good. You know, you'll have a friend that'll say, hey, have you watched this? And you go, no, I never heard of it. And then, you know, so I don't know how to do that. I'll have to hire a Kardashian.
You know what you do? You keep making those connections with the audience, Bob. That's what happens. You go out, you make the connections, then they watch the show.
I hope. I mean, it's a pretty messed up show. And that's the name of it.
What's the name of it?
It's called Messed Up Stories.
Messed Up Stories on True TV.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's a new show.
Very nice. Before I let you go, and of course we'll plug tomorrow night again at the Comedy Shrine, ComedyShrine.com, shows at 8 and 10. You can call 630-585-0300 for reservations. You talked about being trapped by the character you used to do. When you were doing that character, you were also opening for Nirvana, and you came to Chicago and had a little incident.
That was pretty horrible.
Yeah, it was it was a joke about... Right after Michael Jordan's dad had been murdered, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's pretty horrible. Yeah, I think we'll just leave it at that.
Yes, we'll just leave it at that. That was a long time ago in a different man altogether.
I really would not do that now. But the noise wasn't even a boo. It was just, just pure rage from the audience. They wanted to kill me.
How long did you stay on stage after that?
Oh, I stayed up there, you know. hit with a lot of stuff, but I stayed there. And then in order to get me out of the building, they put a towel over my head.
Oh, my God.
Because there was actually more people waiting backstage to beat me up than there were to meet the band.
Wow. Well, yeah. Listen, when you speak your mind, sometimes people get upset, even thousands and thousands of people.
I will say that in hindsight, out of kindness, I would not say something that mean. But, sometimes... it's a learning curve.
Yes, definitely. I've got a million questions for you because you're a fascinating guy. One last thing, and it goes back to what you said about jettisoning the old character. When you did that, because you were wildly successful with that character, how much resistance did you meet within the industry of people going, "Listen, Bobcat, this is how you were marketed. This is you. We don't know if the new Bobcat is going to sell."
Well, mostly the resistance was in the audience, and I understand they have an expectation. And, so even to this day, people yell up, do a voice and stuff. But, I end up doing it a little bit occasionally in stories that I tell that, so I hope people walk away and they don't feel disappointed. But that was the real resistance there, But there's been so many times where, I remember when I had a job on ER, and I go, "Oh, they want me to act, and then I did my lines, and the director goes, they go, "Could you do that voice?"
On ER?
Yeah, I was like, on ER again, but
Well, listen, if they want it, you give them a little bit and everybody's happy. Congratulations on all the success and happy new year. Tomorrow you can see Bobcat Goldthwait at the Comedy Shrine in Aurora. Showtimes are at 8 and 10. Go to comedyshrine.com. Get your tickets there or call 630-585-0300. Two wonderful shows, I'm sure. Bobcat, it's been a pleasure. Next time I see you, hopefully we can go to Omaha again and see some Elvis impersonators.
Yes, okay.
All right. Take care, man. Happy New Year. Bye-bye. That's Bobcat Goldthwait. He's a fun guy and very, very unique individual. All right. We're talking about shows. We're talking about show business. We're talking about all sorts of entertainment. Want to go see Tony and Tina's wedding? Of course you do. It's fantastic. Do we have a show on New Year's Eve? Sure. I don't mean to cross promote, but we have a show on New Year's Eve too. So what do we say, Kevin? Let's say, is that good? We'll go caller 7. Caller 7 at 312-981-7200. Caller 7 will get a pair of tickets to Tony and Tina's wedding. It's now playing in the Belmont Theater District. Come celebrate with the happy couple. Drink, laugh, and dance the night away to the musical hits of the 80s. For reservations, holiday gift certificates, and information, visit TonyLovesTina.com. 7th caller, you're going to see Tony and Tina's wedding, including me, at WGN. All right, congratulations to Pam. She has won the final pair of tickets to Tony and Tina's wedding. Well, not the final pair, but the final pair I have to give away. Hey, with your support, Chicago Tribune Charities is helping to transform the lives of those in need across Chicagoland. Give now at www.chicagotribune.com/donate. So, Pam is going to see Tony and Tina's wedding. Now, I asked Kevin if this would be too self-serving. It makes me uncomfortable. But Dwayne has been on hold. He's been wanting to jump in and say something, and Kevin said, "No, Dwayne wants to talk to you." So, hi, Dwayne.
Hey, Brian, or should I say Vinny Black?
No, I'm Brian. Here I'm Brian.
We attended last night's show. My wife and I celebrate our 25th wedding anniversary.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, you referred to my girls as the Brady girls.
They were very, very attractive young ladies. You're a lucky man. Your wife is beautiful, and you got three beautiful girls. So good for you. Congrats. Happy anniversary, too.
Hey, thanks a lot. Hey, the show was phenomenal. I mean, I'm telling you, by the end of the evening, I mean, the whole cast made you feel like family. And by the end of the evening, like Dominic and the jilted boyfriend, Nick, and Barry, I mean, they were referring to me by my name. I mean, it was just unbelievable. What a show.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you had a good time.
Yeah, and, I'm telling you, your audience, if they want to put their problems on pause for a couple hours, go see it. We're still talking about it. We just enjoyed it so much, and I had to call you and give you props.
Thank you, Dwayne. I appreciate that. And just so you know, Dwayne is not being compensated for this call at all. This is and he bought his own tickets. He came out of his own volition. Well, happy anniversary again, Dwayne, and happy New Year. And thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
Take care. All right, let's do this. Then it's news time on WGN.
orphan, son of a whore and a Scotsman, dropped
oh my
in the
goodness.
Middle of a forgotten spot in the Caribbean.
Right now, fans of this musical are singing along, going, "Finally, an all Hamilton station." It's Brian Noonan in for Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN. That, of course, from the hit Broadway musical Hamilton, which is playing here in Chicago to rave reviews. Sometimes when things become such a huge cultural icon, they become a target for satire, and rightfully so. And a man who knows how to satirize when it comes to Broadway and Broadway plays is Gerard Alessandrini. He is the writer of Forbidden Broadway, but he is also the writer of the new show that is coming to the Royal George Theater, Spamilton. Gerard, thanks for taking some time today. I appreciate it.
Oh, sure, Brian. Thanks for your interest.
All right, because I'll be honest, I love Hamilton. I can't wait to see this show too, because it's gotta be one of those things. It's so big. Is that what made you turn your sights on it? Because it's overtaken everything.
Oh yeah, I love Hamilton too, and you know I've been in New York over 30 years spoofing Broadway shows with Forbidden Broadway, and Hamilton's the biggest hit since I've been in New York. So I really thought, oh, I better get to this and make a spoof on it. And, of course, you know, Hamilton is wonderful, but very serious.
Yes.
So there's nothing like a good serious musical to make it into a satire.
Now, when you... Go ahead.
In this one, I sort of I created a story, a fictitious story of my own, about how Lin-Manuel Miranda came up with the idea for Hamilton and how he wrote it. So it's, totally daydreaming, and it has nothing to do with reality. So hopefully it's funny. But it's sort of about Lin-Manuel Miranda creating Hamilton.
Now, and I read he has seen the show, because the show is running in New York. It's coming to Chicago in, when is this, March 3rd, it begins at the Royal George Theater. But Lin-Manuel Miranda has seen this, correct? And how did he react?
He was laughing hysterically, and he tweeted that he laughed his brains out. I think he was very flattered. He'd always been a fan of Forbidden Broadway, even long before... he started having Broadway hits, like in The Heights.
Right.
He came to see our spoof of that twice. So I think he was taken back but flattered that the show was all about him and Hamilton and, wasn't just one number like we usually do in Broadway, but a whole show. So he seemed to love it. And then he came back with his family and wife to see it again. So
there you go.
I guess you liked it.
Yeah, I would take that as high praise. Now, you've mentioned Forbidden Broadway, which has been running forever, basically, in New York. What makes something spoofable? Is it just the sheer size of it? Is there something about the play itself that maybe some people might not be familiar with that show, but to you it was like, oh, I gotta make fun of this.
Forbidden Broadway and Spamilton, the spoof of Hamilton. It's about the hype that surrounds the show. And I think everybody is exposed to that hearing things on the radio or seeing ads on buses or cabs or on TV. And, you know, that's mostly what we've always been spoofing in Forbidden Broadway and in Hamilton.
And when you do this, how did you get good reaction from Lin-Manuel Miranda. Have you had adverse reaction from some of the other shows that you've spoofed?
No. Not to our face.
Ah.
No, I don't know what they tell the public. But usually the stars would come and the writers would come and they'd be flattered. I think Forbidden Broadway and Hamilton, I think with Spamilton, we speak highly of the writers. So usually the writers aren't too offended. Sometimes the stars are offended because we go after their idiosyncrasies or things that are funny about them. So, and I think if people are laughing, I think, that cuts it down a little bit so it's not as bitter. And, I like to think Forbidden Broadway and Alice Spamilton are pretty damn funny.
So when you're looking to, when you're writing the story for Spamilton, and you mentioned it's kind of, you're focusing on the creator of Hamilton, Lin-Manuel Miranda, and how he came up with this. Do you have things that you write and you go, oh no, that's too mean. I got to temper it a little bit.
I was just thinking about that today. I think we had one crack about Lin-Manuel Miranda. It wasn't bad, but I remember saying to the cast, oh, we don't need to say that. I was just trying to make a rhyme. With Rich. So I'll rhyme Rich another way. So there's a little bit of holding back. I think if it's truthful and pointed, it's okay. if it's you know, just gregarious or you know, extra, we can take it out.
So
and then of course, you know, I'm using Lin-Manuel's music and lyrics as well as some other Barney music lyrics, so I have to respect them as writers.
Yes. Well, that's it. Let's go back to the hype for a minute, because the hype surrounding Hamilton is unlike, I mean, I was here, we've had long-term shows here, Wicked, and all sorts of wonderful shows have come to Chicago and run for a long time. I don't remember any hype like this. Have you seen that kind of hype, even in New York?
No, I have not, in all experience in New York. I don't go back, maybe my Phil 80 before I was born has some hype. But certainly not in my lifetime. And not only is there hype, but like so many people know the songs. I walked into a bank the other day at the ATM, and this little 3-year-old boy was singing, look around, how wonderful it is to be alive right now, singing all the lyrics to the Skyless song. So, and I think that's what's funny about makes Hamilton funny, is that people know the song, so they know how I've changed the lyrics, how I've rewritten the lyrics to get a laugh. So, I don't, in my lifetime, I don't remember a score being embraced by the general public as much as Hamilton has been.
No, because sometimes you'll know the big song from a score of a show. You know, the fly song.
Right.
And now I can't remember it as I'm using it as my example, which is unbelievable. Defying Gravity, that's it. The Fly, you know, Gerard, the flying song. That one. But that's my point. You might know one song from a score. This one, as you said, people know from front to back, and it's, I don't know, my daughter is the one who turned me on to it, and when she had already had the whole soundtrack memorized, and then the more I listen to it, it's the same thing. I can call up songs and just... It's crazy.
Right. Well, you know, they're very well written. And we've talked about this in the show. Lin-Manuel Miranda has a huge palette of songs, not only his rap DVDs, but Broadway songs. Mm-hmm. I even hear a little bit of classical Mozart influence in it, and swing, and there's all different types of music. So it's very appealing to young people. And I think it's appealing to everybody at some point. And the song, you know, his lyrics are tremendous, and I've done my best to turn them inside out and, you know, get a laugh. But,
and was it difficult? Because, as you said, Forbidden Broadway, you do a song from a show. Was it more difficult, I would imagine it was, to construct an entire show around one other show?
Yes, it was. It was. It took more time. I mean, it seemed like once I hooked into the idea, it was a go, but it took a long time. And, you know, rap, many of the songs in Hamilton are rap, so many of the songs of Hamilton are rap, has a tremendous amount of wordage. So it's like three times the wordage that you'd find in songs from Wicked or Book of Mormon. So it took me three times as long to write it. And it was quite a challenge, because I'm not what you call a rap writer, but I had to learn very quickly.
Did you include the song that everybody has heard about, this, the most words and the fastest rap ever performed is in Hamilton?
Absolutely.
Do you have in Spamilton, is there a version of that?
Yeah, I have a whole we referred to the actors that did it originally on the soundtrack and cast album. So Davy Dix, they have a rap contest between Renee Goldsberry, Davy Dix, and Lin-Manuel Miranda. So I have it all there. It's all there.
Very nice. It sounds like a lot of fun. And the other thing is, somebody texted in and wanted to know, can you come and see Spamilton without having seen Hamilton? Will they still be able to understand
Absolutely. And don't forget, it's not just about Hamilton. It's about what Hamilton did to Broadway. So there's all these other spoofs of Broadway shows. It's almost like Forbidden Broadway is inside of Hamilton. So we have songs from American in Paris and Gershwin and Hello Dolly and a whole Sondheim section. So, I mean, it helps if you know about Broadway a little bit, you know, if you've heard this and that.
Right.
But you certainly don't have to have seen Hamilton to enjoy Spamilton, because it's another planet. It's got its own story, its own score, and you can follow it from the beginning. I honestly would say, if you know the soundtrack from Hamilton, it's going to help a little bit if you've heard the record or just heard some songs on the radio. But if people like you keep playing something radio, people will. That's all I need.
And I also read that you're going to use Chicago actors for the production.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, I've worked in Chicago before with Forbidden Broadway, many productions, and a couple of other shows. And there's a tremendous amount of talent there, and I really look forward to mining that gold and getting them in Spamilton.
Well, I look forward to coming and seeing Spamilton, because I have a feeling it's going to be just hilarious and wonderful, as Forbidden Broadway is. Gerard Alessandrini is the writer and creator of not only Forbidden Broadway, but Spamilton, which opens March 3rd at the Royal George Theater. You can go to theroyalgeorgetheater.com, get your tickets. They are on sale now. Thankfully, your tickets are a little more accessible at this point. But once it opens, forget about it.
Yeah. In New York, also, after we opened, it was as hard as Hamilton to get in. So.
That's nice. Well, it's going to be that way here. So we'll get the word out. Everybody needs to go see Spamilton at the Royal George Theater. Gerard, I really appreciate the time. Best of luck with the show, and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Brian. Same to you.
Take care. That's Gerard Alessandrini. He is the writer and creator of Spamilton, as I said, which will be, I think I hung up on him. I didn't mean to do that, but, you know, listen. All right, we're done with him. He's gone. That's horrible. That's not how I want to end the year, hanging up on a guest that was so cordial and nice and creative. Go see Spamilton. That'll be fun. So now I'm going to have to do that, not just because we had Gerard on, but because I now have to go after I see Hamilton on Tuesday. And so Wednesday, I will just be on cloud nine. If you see me on Wednesday, Kevin, I'll be floating by. I'll probably be singing. I may be wearing a King George outfit. Who knows how I will arrive to work when I fill in for Roe on Wednesday. But I have a feeling Jeff and Brian will not be happy, because I will want an all-show tunes Rokon and Anna DeVlantis show. It'll be a little different from what they usually hear in the afternoon.
I can see it working, though, yeah.
I think so, too. I think sometimes we have to free our mind, and then the rest will follow. Who was that, TLC? I can't remember who did that song. Something like that. Some girl group. Why am I quoting that? That's dumb. All right, let's do this. And then I have a story of ultimate irony. To wrap up the program, Ultimate Irony on WGN. It's Brian Noonan for Bill and Wendy. Bill and Wendy will be back with you on Tuesday after the holiday. 2-week vacation. They should be all rested and ready to go. So we'll be listening on Tuesday when Bill and Wendy return. All right, I mentioned a story of ultimate irony. Last night, if you are a college football bowl fan, you know that the Belk Bowl was on last night. Ooh, really, Brian? How did we miss that? I don't know. It was Arkansas versus Virginia Tech. Did you watch the Belk Bowl, Kevin?
I've never even heard of it.
Of course not. Who's heard of the Belk? There's so many bowls because everybody wants to play. You could debate the bowl system all you want. I'm not going to do that. I just know that last night, if you were tuned into the Belk Bowl and you said to yourself, oh my goodness, I cannot wait to watch senior tight end Jeremy Sprinkle, because he's projected to be one of the top 10 tight ends in next year's NFL draft. And you thought to yourself, why do I know all this information about a tight end from Arkansas? Doesn't matter. Here's the point. He didn't play last night. You know why? He was playing in the Belk Bowl, and he got arrested because he was shoplifting, where? At a Belk store. Oh, Jeremy, what happened? He was charged by a Charlotte Mecklenburg police with shoplifting by concealment. I don't know what the difference is. Who's going to shoplift out in the open? Hey, just by the way, I'm stealing this. Oh, okay, go ahead. He was at the Belk department store. He was actually released. Here's where it gets even more dumb. This is where sometimes you look at people and you just say, you're really stupid, right? Like somebody dropped you on your head kind of stupid. Or maybe you've taken a few too many hits on the field, because as a part of the game, as a perk, Belk says, hey, you're playing in the Belk Bowl. We're going to give every player a $450 gift card, and then you can go in and we're going to give you 90 minutes to spend it. So it's like that grocery game where you used to supermarket dash or whatever it was called, where you ran around the grocery store and you loaded up your carts. Well, he goes in, he does that, and he's shoplifted $260 worth of merchandise. The Razorbacks coach announced the decision to suspend him about 2 hours before the game. When they finally figured out, everybody knew that he had a really dumb tight end playing and something had to be done about this. And the people from Belk went, is he going to give us back our stuff? Because, you know, we already gave him $450 and a cool Belk Bowl jersey, which I guarantee is getting framed and put in his study. Do you think Jeremy Sprinkle has a study?
He doesn't visit it.
No.
He might have it, but yeah.
Unless that's where all the video game consoles are. Yes, I'm generalizing. Football players play video games. Relax. Jeremy's suspension has been known by our staff and players for several days, so we've had a chance to prepare our game plan accordingly, said the coach. Throughout his career and this season as a graduate student-athlete, what do you think that entails at Arkansas? Graduate student-athlete. Those three words don't seem to go together.
I can't wrap my brain around that.
Razorback. Can you tell us what a Razorback is? It's a kind of pig. Yep, you're in. You're a graduate student-athlete. Fantastic. Throughout this career and this season as a graduate student-athlete, Jeremy has displayed numerous times the qualities we want to represent our program. Unfortunately, shoplifting is the one quality we do not like to represent our program, so now we have to crack down on Jeremy. Oh, my goodness. Sprinkle had 33 receptions for 380 yards and four touchdowns, which right there, I am shocked that they suspended him. Somebody, it must have leaked out, because that's the kind of guy you don't bench for, you know, going into, what is a, I've never been to a Belk department store. Is it like a Marshall's? What kind of store is
it? Yeah, I'm picturing like a, what's that big, like, country store?
Big country store, Farm and Fleet?
Yes, that's the one.
I don't think it's,
that's
I don't
what
know.
I'm picturing.
Maybe
for
it's like a Farm and Fleet. I've never been to Belk. Anyway, he's, as I said, he's projected to be one of the top 10 tight ends available in the next year. Unbelievable. So there you go. If somebody gives you a gift card to their store, don't steal from them as well. There's your lesson for the end of 2016. That's what we do. We're going to do this, and then we'll come back and listen to this. Elton Jim is going to be on. We're going to find out what he's talking about on WGN.